Hey guys, so you're about to listen to what we ended up calling the Mutant Tea Shop AU, which is a bit of a misnomer because it's actually a Hobbit, X-Men, Fusion, coffee shop or tea shop AU. This is a series of voice memos that went between myself, Kelakiria, Annalisa Ten, and Rena Jenkins. Over the course of a few days in, I think it was April of 2013. And you'll have to listen. But that's why the sound quality is a little all over the place. Was, at one point, Rena was recording on the street, so she's got some street noise, and I only had my computer's internal mic, so there's a lot of background noise. So, in the spirit of that, I'm recording on my phone, and you can hear the traffic. Yes, so content-wise, like I said, this is a Hobbit X-Men AU. It features the pairings Bilbo Thorne and Rogue Wolverine, so that's Marie Logan. There's nothing else I don't think we really need to warn for except for crack. There's a lot of crack. It's voice memos being passed between, three crazy fangirl friends. The music that plays is Curly's Tea Party, Curly, Kerli, because at one point Rena tweeted us and said, "This needs to be the theme song." And we both said yes. So now it's the theme song. Curly's Tea Party.
Hi, Jess and Marissa. First, I want both of you to know that you are horrible influences. Jess, especially for going on the Rogue and Bilbo would make super awesome, fabulous bros. And Marissa, well, no. Marissa, you're just a horrible influence in general, but I still love both of you. These were the things that I came up with when I was supposed to be doing homework. So, in the Hobbit X-Men Tea Shop AU crossover, Rogue would run the best mutant-friendly tea shop ever, because I'm gonna categorize Tolkien's people as a different type of mutant, where dwarves and hobbits have like a physical mutation that make them have hairy feet and sexy beards, and elves slash wizards have elemental mutations. I don't know what we're gonna call it, whatever, just run with it. Anyway, Bilbo would be Rogue's awesome hobbit co-owner who knows that there are reasons why she wears gloves and long sleeves all the time, but decides to accept the lies that she doesn't want to spill super hot coffee on her bare skin. Bilbo himself is a historian who left his home in the Shire and wants to have a nice quiet life in Genosha with people who will accept him. Thorin and his dwarves are settling in Genosha, but have super crazy plots to retake their homeland elsewhere, where they were driven out by Smaug because he hates. I'm gonna make Smaug the William Stryker of this universe. So they're settled in Genosha and they're happy, but Thorin still wants to reclaim their homeland. Logan is his ridiculous wandering self, and he, I don't know, he is some kind of something where, maybe they could be interrelated, right? Maybe Smaug is the William Stryker and he's taking mutants and kind of warping them to serve his own purpose because he thinks that mutants are animals who need to be controlled. So if somehow this became a super mega unexpected journey, like true crossover, they could all just go to whatever this version of Alkali Lake slash the Misty Mountain is gonna be and just kick super awesome Smaug ass. But anyway, Wolverine had his memories warped by somebody, and he's just chilling in Genosha trying to figure out his next step. But he frequents Rogue's mutant-friendly tea shop every day, even though he hates tea. He just sits there and like sulks all the time. And Rogue I don't know. I don't really know what the relationship is, but that's the backstory. Okay? Go.
Okay, I'm supposed to be babysitting, so this is gonna be brief, but I want to say this before I forget. All right, Logan is basically immortal, right? And he has that whole mercenary thing. What if he were a soldier in Erebor's army, and during the evacuation slash exile of Thorin's folk, Logan gets nabbed and is experimented on by Smaug, and that's when he loses all his memories. So when he's reunited with Thorin in this tea shop, it's like, wait, what? Because there's almost an echo of something familiar there, but because he's lost his memories, he doesn't know that he has 150 years of serving at Thorin's side. Just like, because okay, think about it. Wolverine is short. Wolverine is hairy. Wolverine has a fondness for blades, and Wolverine has a terrible temper. A distinct hairstyle that denotes his personality and lineage, and also, right, he carries his weapons with him at all times, and he has, the Berserker Rage thing going on. I think I'll have more about this later, but Wolverine would make an excellent dwarf, so maybe he is one of Jonin's folk, and they don't even know! Also, about the elves being elementals thing, isn't there's somebody who has like a tree sense or a growing gift, and just be like elves are a spin-off of that. Okay, I'm gonna save this and send this to you, and then have more thoughts about this later because oh my god, this is the best epic crossover of all time. Okay, bye. Hey, it's Marissa. So I was listening to the Mutant Tea Shop AU thing again, and I just had the most epic idea. Because Danielle had said something about Smaug being the William Stryker of this universe. Saruman breeds the Uruk-hai from the orcs and the goblins. Yes, Saruman is, in fact, experimenting on mutants. Oh my God, he's working with Smaug in the mountain, and he's taking people's mutations, and he's studying them, and he's trying to basically, he's trying to breed a better mutant soldier that will follow only him. And he's, the thing with how the orcs came into being in the first place was because they were elves that were tormented and twisted and tortured until they lost their very nature, blah blah blah. Well, Saruman is trying to recreate that with the whole Uruk-hai thing, except, they're mutants and not elves. And I just had to be like, oh, Saruman shows up too! I just wanted to share that with everybody. Also, for some reason now you've got me thinking about, like, the political ramifications of this whole thing, because if Genosha is its own country independent, do you remember, well, maybe it wasn't actually in the movie, maybe it was in a fic and I've read too much and I've just sort of smushed it all together into my head. But no, it probably was in a fic. I don't think Eric and Charles had this conversation in the movie. And I'm just remembering things like hallucination-y wise. Somebody, someplace, had a conversation with Eric about how you can't just have all the mutants in one place because they have human parents, some of them. They have, they might have human kids. So is Genosha an integrated city, country, city state? We'll pretend it's a Greek city state. Is it that mutants and humans get along fine? Or are you only allowed to live there if you're a mutant? Or what? Because that would play into Marie's cover story. Is she playing that, like, is she self-conscious about her skin because she doesn't like killing people? And like she's leaving people with the assumption that she's got some other mutation because she obviously has to be a mutant to be in Genosha. Or is it an integrated city that there are both mutants and Homo sapiens, but because she's wearing the gloves, she's playing as Homo sapiens instead of Homo superior? Because that would have to do with her interactions with Bilbo and also with Logan and stuff. And also it would get to like the political tensions between Erebor and Genosha. Are they neighbors? Did they used to be allies? was Genosha a splinter state? What's going on there? Okay, so I have to go think about this some more and then go to the mall with my sister and buy her new bras. Okay, yes, I'm going to send this to you guys right now. Bye!
Hey guys, so I'm using my internal microphone because I don't have any recording equipment with me, but now I have all these thoughts and I must share them because we must share all the feels. So Rena said that Stryker is like Saruman because they're experimenting on orcs slash Uruk-hai slash mutants, which like, yeah. And then Danielle said something about Thorin and Wolverine, which, like, Thorin slash Wolverine, which, I'm sorry to say, makes a lot of sense to me, because, like, neither of them, this would be before Logan lost his memories, but, like, maybe there was some time before he got captured by Stryker, Saruman, and after the sack of Erebor, when they were like wandering around together, and maybe like Logan was Thorin's bodyguard, or like bodyguard and friend, and you know, they had sex occasionally because you know they're in really bad situations, everyone's really hostile, and sometimes you just like need someone to be near you, but sometimes you also just like want to have sex and you need to have like someone reaffirm that, you know, you're worth spending time with in that way. And, you know, and they're both, and Logan especially is just like, I'm stressed, I need to relieve my stress. Thorin, you're stressed, let's relieve our stress together. This seems like the manly thing to do. Certainly more manly than, you know, trusting men, dwarfly. It's more dwarfly than trusting men. Let's go with that. Yeah, which, like, makes it extra strange for Thorin to walk, for the two of, like, he just runs into Logan, like, on the street one day, and runs up, and he probably doesn't actually hug him, but, you know, he's overcome with emotion. Maybe he does hug him. No, because that's what Bill does. So he doesn't hug him, but he's, you know, oh, like, Logan, I thought you died. Like, we haven't seen you in decades. You know, what happened? And it breaks his heart because Logan just looks at him and there's no recognition in his eyes at all. And it's just, I have no idea who you are. And in the back of his mind, maybe that's not quite right. Like, there is something there. That this guy does look familiar, but, like, he's supposed to have a beard, and he's supposed to have, like, a lot more gold on him, and he's not supposed to be just, like, at the street corner, and it's not supposed to be like this, and he can't figure out why, so he just denies that that he recognizes him at all, and Thorin's heartbroken implies, like, a romantic partnership, which I don't actually think there is, but you know, heartbroken in that, like, but you're my best friend. You made sort of the whole ordeal after the sack of Erebor. You made that bearable. And then once I was back on my feet, we lost you, and now you're back, but you don't recognize me. And then Thorin starts doubting himself for, like, extra bonus wooby points. He starts doubting himself because he had blocked out so much of what happened right after the sack of Erebor. Maybe this isn't his friend. Maybe Logan really did, you know, maybe Logan really was killed. And this is just him, you know, being obsessive. And he knows he's obsessive. He does know it. But it's all channeled toward, you know, getting Erebor back. We've got to get it back. And the first time he saw Logan, all he could think was, this is going to make it so much easier, you know, to have this guy to rely on. Because the rest of the company are wonderful in all ways, don't get me wrong. But none of, I was looking at this, there's Dwalin is sort of close in age to Thorin. But I think he's still older. Hang on, let me check how old the actors are. Okay, so apparently Thorin's older than Dwalin. This is very strange to me. That doesn't seem right. I don't know why. Apparently Dwalin is 169 and Thorin is 195. Hang on. Oh, hey, apparently there's a Thorin in chemistry. It's an organic arsenic compound used in the determination of thorium and barium. Okay, that was not something we needed to know, but I thought that was entertaining. And, I don't know, somehow, okay, now that I found that out, I really want to work this in somehow, because obviously there's like a lot of, there's a lot of chemistry happening, just like in general, okay, well, metaphorically too. I was thinking literally, because, you know, from Magneto's helmet, but I don't know, like, Smaug as, like, a genetic engineer, and Stryker, or Stryker and Saruman as, you know, genetically engineering, or not genetically engineering, but genetically modifying mutants. I still want Smaug to be some sort of associated with heat somehow, so, I don't know, smelting something. He's mining. Guys, he's mining. That's why he wants Erebor, is there's a specific, well, Mithril, obviously. No, that was Moria. But the Arkenstone. There's something valuable in Erebor, which is why he's mining it, and if, like, Thorin could get, like, worked in there, you know you want to. You know you do. Okay, so, hang on. Okay, so, yeah, Richard Armitage is 41, and Graham McTavish is 52, so that's why I feel like Dwalin is older. But it doesn't actually matter, because either way, I don't know, there's still, like, a 30-year age difference, which, yeah, isn't a lot for dwarves, but still, I feel like Logan would be really about Thorin's age, so they grew up together, because that's the best way of, like, having, it's not the best way of having a bodyguard, but it's one of the sort of ways of setting up bodyguarddom is, you know, you have the bodyguard be, like, really emotionally attached to the person, which can backfire, obviously, because the person gets attached to the bodyguard, but, can also result in a much better bodyguard. So, Thorin is bodyguards, or Logan was Thorin's bodyguard in Erebor, and they were hanging out post-Erebor, and then, Stryker / Saruman grabbed him and, you know, made him lose his memory, and, probably thought it would be really funny to, you know, ironic to take away maybe his memory of the fact that he was a dwarf, or that he had any connection to dwarves, but at the same time give him, you know, knives that he could never put down, that was just very ironic. Because I can see Saruman having that kind of ironic humor. Evil ironic humor. But then Thorin sees this guy and he's like, "You're my childhood friend. We spent all this time together. How do you not remember this?" And like I said, Logan, you know, says that he doesn't, but there's kind of something there where he's like, that this does ring a bell. So he doesn't entirely reject Thorin out of hand because you know that he would otherwise. Like, because we love Logan, but he's actually kind of a dick. Which is, yeah, part of the reason why we love him. Yes. Okay. So he's like, "You know what, like, I don't know you, but let's get a cup of coffee." So that's how they end up getting coffee, and that's how they meet Bilbo and Rogue. And, there's, like, an instant connection between the four of them, but it's not, I don't know, in some ways it's not, it's almost not really a happy connection, because Rogue's on the run, right? And she's on the run from Saruman, and, oh my god, okay, just got a thought, so she's on the run from Saruman, and part of the reason she's on the run from Saruman is because he keeps trying to recruit her. Mystique does this in the movie. I don't think she really does in the comics. Someone else tries to do it in the comics. Maybe she does try to do it in the comics. Magneto tries to do it in the comics. Someone tries to do it. Someone keeps trying to recruit her, and sometimes they're successful and sometimes not. Let's go in this one where she's not successful, and that's why she's hiding out. But before Logan either escaped or kind of was let loose, a la Gollum, he was let loose to go find Thorin. Oh, God. Okay, yes. So he was let loose to go find Thorin, except then he, like, that worked better than Saruman expected because he actually, you know, because even brainwashed and, like, with all his memories gone, Logan's not a complete idiot. So he, like, entirely escaped out from under Saruman's radar. But the original idea was that he would go out and sort of bring Thorin back in. You know, would find Thorin, sort of Thorin homing beacon. Or Logan would be a homing beacon for Thorin, equally. But that didn't quite work. But before he was let go or escaped, she saw Rogan. Damn it, Danielle! Rogue saw, Logan, you know, with Saruman, so she associates the two of them. But she can't tell Bilbo that's why they're freaking her out, because, you know, she's in hiding. And who said this? I don't remember. But Bilbo knows that there's, like, something up with her, and, like, mutant powers, but he doesn't know what, and it's none of his business, in a more protective way. Like, it's none of his business, but he doesn't want anything to happen to her, not Nay. Like, it's none of my business, I'm not gonna interfere. That's part of why he's really rude to Thorin and Logan when they first come in, is because Rogue is obviously freaked out, but Logan doesn't recognize her, and even if he, you know, did have some kind of memory of that, which I don't really think he would, but right now he's still trying to figure out what the hell is going on with Thorin, so, you know, he's not even paying attention to this girl at the counter with the gloves who's, you know, admittedly, she's handing him his money a little slowly, and it is weird that she's wearing gloves because it's high summer, but, you know, what the hell, there's this guy in his memory, and what is happening? But Thorin does notice that Rogue is, like, kind of freaked out. And he's kind of offended on Logan's behalf, even though he is sort of like, but is this Logan? But he's still offended because it's his friend. And even if it's not his friend, it looks like his friend. So he's just going to pretend because it's easier that way and it hurts less that way. And he spent so long looking for Logan that he's just going to have these 5 minutes of pretending that this is Logan. And then, oh God, and then Logan orders Logan's favorite drink. And why does Thorin know how Logan takes his coffee? I don't know why Thorin knows why Logan takes it, because they live together for years. But he just does. And so when Logan orders, I don't know, this extremely girly drink, I can't think of a girly drink. Iced vanilla chai with caramel drizzle and coconut sprinkles. I don't know. But it's stupidly specific. And Thorin's like, what? Maybe it is you. Okay, can I hope? No, I can't hope. But I want to hope. No, hope is bad. But maybe hope a little? But then there's this girl, and she's, you know, clearly uncomfortable around Logan. So he's all upset, and then that makes Bilbo all upset, and then they're all upset at each other. And then someone else walks in. Who walks in? Elrond walks in, because Elrond is my favorite. And also Glorfindel, and also Mystique, because clearly Mystique is an elf. Possibly an elf that got, like, experimented on slightly by Stryker, but possibly not. I can't decide. I need thoughts. Give me input, guys. So, you know, they walk in, because, Rivendell Core, Rivendell Inc. is right around the corner, and Glorfindel is CFO because he's got hair like gold. Work with me. Glorfindel is CFO. Elrond is CEO. And I want Galadriel to be working for a competing firm. Oh God. Yes. Damn. Okay. Galadhon Inc. So there's also Galadhon Inc. and Rivendell Inc. or maybe Imladris Inc. Nope, they have a subsidy called Imladris Inc. I don't know what they do. They do something. But they're trying to hire Mystique. And they're trying to hire her away from Stryker. This is like part like five of their like 500 step plan to like bring down Saruman Enterprises. Or double S, double S. This is part of triple S. Sauron, can we get Sauron in there too? This is part of their plan to bring down Triple S Enterprises. Nazi associations. Maybe not. Okay, how about just S Enterprises? Okay. So this is part five of their 5-step plan to bring down our 500-step plan to bring down S Enterprises. So Stryker, Saruman, and Sauron. Yes! They're trying to hire her, and things were getting kind of heated. So they're like, guys, let's get out of this room. Let's go out for coffee. We'll just talk about whatever movies come out lately. And I don't know what's coming out lately. Maybe it. I kind of want to not cross out the possibility of Avengers crossovers, so maybe let's have the Star Trek movies be coming out soon. Second Star Trek movie, just because. Let's channel the glee for that. So they're talking about the newest Star Trek movie. And oh, guys, the newest Star Trek movie is coming out, and Bilbo has a crush on Benedict Cumberbatch's character, the bad guy. So he's got a crush on him, which is why he's listening in on their conversation. And I don't know where to go from here. So Bilbo's listening in, and Rogue is kind of freaked out by Logan, and Thorin is freaked out by the fact that Rogue is freaked out by Logan, and suddenly this coffee shop is like about to explode. Let's see, what else? What other holes can you fill in? So Marissa, you're wondering about Genosha and Erebor, how they're related. I feel like they're neighboring city-states because, I don't know, Genosha always like bothers me because because it is supposed to be like mutants only, and then it becomes like a slave state somehow where mutants are all enslaved. The point is it's not integrated, but maybe Erebor was more so, but like they were still friendly. This was before a lot of like the crazy Sauron, Stryker, Saruman stuff started happening. They were sort of quiet, kind of mountainous countries. They didn't have a whole. They did have resources, but sort of no one really knew what they were. But then, sort of, other people started paying attention, saying, "Oh, so, this Mithril stuff, it's really good for electronics, and it builds really good weapons. And what resources does Genosha have?" I have no idea. Adamantium and. Okay, it's full of adamantium and vibranium because those are important in the Marvel Universe. And I don't know, it maybe there's. I wonder if you could. Ooh, what would happen for like amalgam of vibranium and adamantium and mithril? It would be really pretty and repel everything. You could make amazing body armor. Dude, that's what it's really popular for because Because that's part of like what happens with weapons development is it's like the back and forth of you get really big, but then you also get really small, and you can't really get smaller than like the individual. So people start coming up with like this individual Iron Man style like body armor that's really really light, but also really, because people are vain, it's really pretty. Which is where like the mithril comes in, but the mithril also makes it really light, and the adamantium and vibranium make it really strong and vibration resistant. There's something about vibranium being vibration resistant, which is okay, fine. Maybe it like conducts electricity only in like certain ways, or doesn't at all, so you can't like electrocute anyone, and it like repels things, and maybe it turns colors if there's poison involved, God only knows. But it's suddenly everyone wants a piece of that, and that's why the whole S Enterprises comes in, is they're trying to corner the market. But it's also, those are really hard to mine, which is why the dwarves are really good at it, and certain mutant powers are also really good at it. And that's part, guys, that's part of why they were trying to genetically modify them, was to make them, like, better miners. Oh my god, okay. I think I have to stop now, because I've been talking for over 20 minutes, and I should work. But we need to keep this feels chain going, because it's kind of beautiful. It is a thing of beauty. I love you guys. Talk to you later.
Recorded from an email sent from Calicaria to Annalise O'Ten and Rena Jenkins.
Also, Stark Enterprises is having a trademark battle with S Enterprises, and Tony is furious that they're trying to make, essentially, Iron Man suits. I don't really see the Avengers coming in, but this was bugging me. Eventually, Rogue tries to run, but Bilbo stops her, all, "Where do you think you're going, young lady?" And she doesn't want to explain, but Bilbo's like an uncle to her. Father would imply more of a connection than she's willing to form, because she's used to being on her own, and letting someone in that far would hurt if she trusted wrongly. And he sits her down with some cocoa and scones, and eventually she spills the whole story, and much to her surprise, he agrees that if she thinks she should leave, they should.
We?
Well, it's not as though there's much for me here, is there?
But your coffee shop!
Oh, piddle the shop. And Rogue's all, wide eyes! And then Thorne and Logan? Logan agreed to go home with Thorne, because he's fucking stressed, and the guy offered. Thorne offered because, well, he's not really sure why. Something about checking if Logan had the right scars. Which he does, with a lot of new ones on top. Go back to the shop. Thorne just likes their tea, okay? Nothing else. No reason. None. At all. But it's got a sign saying, under new management, Lobelia moves fast. And, well, nothing will do, but they have to figure out where the little shopkeeper and his shy assistant went. With assistance from Gandalf, whose twin brother does some freelancing for S Enterprises, but is thinking of setting up his own business. With his lovely husband, obviously.
Ooh, I like that. Oh, I like that a lot. Okay, so I kind of got the idea that, or at least I like the idea that, I like the idea that Erebor was a more inclusive mutant society, so that even if you weren't a mutant, even if you were just Homo sapiens, you were still, you weren't like a secondary citizen, you were still alright. They were more tolerant than Genosha, who has a very strict only mutants across the border kind of policy. Which is why Rogue ran there, because she figured that would give her some safety, hiding among strictly her own kind. Because she can't exactly pass as Homo sapiens, because of her, well, and she doesn't have an obvious mutation like some of the dwarves do, who's got their, you know, their obvious feral strength and, like, visible. And she's not, like, Sabretooth or something like that, or Mystique, where she's blue, but she has a difficult time finding the mindset that lets her pass as Homo sapiens. So she figured the next safest place to be would be in a city full of mutants. So it would be harder for Stryker, Saruman, and Smaug to find her. But I like the idea that maybe the way Erebor was taken over was sort of an insidious yet hostile takeover. Like, Saruman was an advisor to King Thror, And that's how he found out about the mithril veins in the first place. And that's how he found out about the how versatile this stuff was. It was not only revolutionary in personal defense, but also in tech. Because, face it, mithril is basically fantabulous for everything. So I kind of, like, I feel like Erebor would have been on the verge of a tech revolution. They would have been, you know, communications market would have been completely revolutionized by what you could do with mithril just because of the endless possibilities. You can make things small, you can make things portable, you can make things with better battery life, longer range, and, like, computing would have been completely revolutionized. Tony's extremist procedure would have been so much easier if he'd been building his nanobots out of mithril. I'm just saying. So that's how Saruman finds out about that. He's an advisor to King Thror. And then he lets his buddy Smaug, who happens to have a great big fire belching machine, oh death and nastiness. And then Smaug swoops in, and that's the hostile takeover part. And then they set up camp under the mountain, and Thorin's folk are panicked and freaking out and running away, and there is a huge influx into Erebor, there's an influx of dwarves out of Erebor into Genosha because they're just, you know, over the mountains, pretty much. And I really want Eric to be like, I am your hostile, well, not hostile, but I am your unquestioned dictator of my city-state, but you love me anyway because I am Eric and I have a cape. But, like, I want Eric to be, like, the benevolent despot. That's where I see him in Genosha. He's sitting on the top of the pile and, like, being happy with himself and smug. I can protect my people by making a whole country for them. And Charles is like, must you be so smug before breakfast? And Eric's like, well, I just made you come, so yes, I am. And Charles is like, ugh. And then they have ideological spats over the toast. But that's not a thing that we're doing right now. Right now we're doing tea shop. Eventually we'll get to the tea, right? Okay, so the royal family of Erebor is on the run, and they're hiding as ordinary folk in Genosha because there would have been a super crazy, terrible incident of international proportions if the neighboring city-states, you know, next in head, that's not a word, the next in line for the head of the neighboring city-state were, you know, leading a group of his soldiers and people and an incursion into their neighbor, that would have been, you know, a step below war. So if Thorin is undercover, if he is not Prince Thorin, son of Thrain, son of Thror, Prince Under the Mountain, but is instead Thorin Oakenshield, blacksmith, and sword for hire, you know, then that's why he's all stealth, and that's why he's not wearing the things that Logan would recognize. And I kind of feel like, you know that scene in X1 where Jean's trying to get into Logan's head and you get, like, weird green flashbacks of how the adamantium was applied to his skeleton, and it's not enough for, without context, to make any sense, but with context, you're like, oh, well, this tells the whole story. So I feel like, when Thorin called out Logan's name, that was the kind of moment he had. Not like, I have actual memories of him, but he's triggering something. And then I just really want a face. Like, when Logan orders his, you know, venti decaf mochaccino latte, whatever, you know, 17 buzzwords of coffee that is enough to rot your teeth. And then Thorin just makes his face like, I made a face. It was a beautiful face. It was fantastic. And then just, oh, all the faces. And the thing is, Bilbo is here and he prides himself on having a very all-inclusive coffee shop, or tea shop rather, because coffee makes him jittery. So he tries to serve more tea, you know, and he does scones and he does cupcakes and muffins. But it's mostly, you show up for the tea and the cozy chairs and the general homey atmosphere. But he's making a point to have it be like an all-inclusive. It's not like Starbucks. Anybody can show up, and, you know, if you have a very obvious physical mutation like a tail, you know, he's got special chairs with holes in the back so you can put your appendage through it, you know, and he doesn't discriminate based on, like, you know, if you like raw dormouse in your tea. I feel like some of the feral mutants would prefer raw dormouse to scones, like Sabretooth, you know? I feel like the dwarf mutation is a closer along lines to a feral mutation in that it's a very obvious physical change and it gives them sort of more animalistic instincts, like the possessive behaviors and the tendency towards obsessive behaviors and that kind of thing. So then you could eventually work in some Logan Rogue possessive growly, "You are mine, clammy, bitey, bruise kink" in there. Not that I'm jumping the gun or anything. But, like, and then there's the more, what are they, the mental gifts, kind of? You've got the telepaths and the empaths and the technopaths and stuff, and it's more psychokinetic or something like that. I need to brush up on my X-Men vocab. I don't remember the right words for any of these things. Oh, can Logan be... Not Logan. Logan, we already know he's got a feral mutation. And Thorin, we're going to say he's got a feral mutation too, because that's what the dwarves are. They've got... Okay, if Logan is like a Wolverine and Sabretooth is like a giant cat and Beast is like a cat monkey thing, then the rest of Thorin's company are like badgers. That's what their feral mutation is. They're furry and they're cranky and they like to burrow. They're badgers. But I want Bilbo to be the kind of telepathy where you touch objects and you can see their history, or you can see like the emotional impact of them. So eventually he helps Logan to figure out a little bit of what happened to him when they're going back to Erebor because Marie thinks that Logan is after her because she escaped from Stryker's Let's Play with the Mutants compound. And... Right, so Marie's freaking out because she saw Logan in Stryker's compound, and she starts freaking out because she thinks, like, someone's after her from that. So she's on the run again, and she's like, you know what? I thought Genosha was going to be a safe place for me to be because I'd be hiding amongst my own kind and be hard for them to find. Well, you know what? The only other place I can go, like the absolute last place he'd ever think to look, is back in Erebor. So she and Bilbo are sort of on the run doing their stealth thing, looking for a place to hide and hunker down until she thinks Stryker's lost interest in her again. And meanwhile, Thorin has been sort of... Because, he can't be saying, you know, I am the official head of the royal family of Erebor, making an attempt to arm my subjects and lead a war party, because that would freak Eric the fuck out, and then it would be terrible international Eric is throwing, you know, knives at everybody with his brain. So instead, Thorin's like, well, it's an exploratory mission, and I can't really have a lot of... Oops, sorry, I just kicked my foot into the wall because I have a lot of feels right now. I can't really have a lot of soldiers, so I'll have a caravan. I've got some tinkers, I've got some toy makers, I've got some merchants. And because we're carrying a lot of goods over the mountains into hostile territory, I have one or two armed guards. But that's why the party's small. That's why the party consists of Biffer Buffer and Bumper, you know, because they're the toy makers. And that's how we get away with having Dwalin exist. He's a mercenary. Just because he happens to be a walking armory, well, you know, that too. And that explains Thorin wants loyalty, honor, and a willing heart. And the badger is the sign of Hufflepuff. Oh my goodness, I am the proudest, happiest person right now that I didn't even... I just made that own connection with my own thing. Oh, that's so great. Oh, Hufflepuffs. All the Hufflepuffs. Thorin needs loyalty. Right, so he drags Logan home with him after the coffee shop, and he's just making these faces like... How can you drink that? And he's also thinking, like, oh, I kind of know what that tastes like in your mouth, don't I? Oh, that time we were on the run, and you made this, and it was nasty, but it tasted pretty good from the back of your teeth. And then he's having flashbacks to, like, you know, Logan, naked, stuff like that. And eventually, like, they go back to the tea shop, and there's nobody there, and it's Lobelia, and Thorin kind of takes it as a sign, like, well, maybe we should just go. Clearly, if even my own tea shop, the my habitual place of sitting and relaxing, is changing, then it's a sign that we should just try and take back, or explore the kingdom. And that is how Thorin and Logan just sort of gets pulled along, and he's sort of like, what the hell? But he gets dragged along with them. He gets pulled in Thorin's wake like a baby dolphin. That's how they don't get lost. They get pulled along in their mother's slipstream. Logan gets pulled along in Thorin's slipstream into Erebor. And somewhere over the mountains, they cross paths with Bilbo and Rogue.
Hey guys, I have no idea where this came from, but I was just sitting here thinking, you know, reading my anthro textbook, which is making me kind of angry because it's like, fandom is full of crazy people, and I'm like, nope. Although, now I'm sitting here recording, crazy crossover thoughts about, you know, The Hobbit and X-Men crossovers. So, yeah. But, okay, so I was wondering how Alex and Armando, Havok and Darwin, like, fit into this. And I was like, what if they're kind of that universe's equivalent of Legolas and Gimli? I really, really, really want, and I have no idea why this is happening in my brain, I really want Armando to be, like, the elf-type character, so a lot more. Maybe it's because in X-Men he's older, but sort of the much more self-assured. Ooh, he could be an employee of, can he be an employee of, Imladris? No, he's not an employee of Imladris. He's an employee How about Mirkwood's a city? No, is Mirkwood a city-state? No. Mirkwood is a... Okay, so the company that was formerly known as Greenwood took a hit in the recession and is now, and, like, redid its image. So now it's known as Mirkwood. And he's an employee of Mirkwood, which operates... used to operate within the boundaries of the country of Erebor, but when... and, like, did weapons manufacturing and, like, some kind of shady shit. Kind of like Dale did, another, subsidiary company that worked, sort of had some contracts with, the country of Erebor, city-state of Erebor. But when, S Enterprises, Smaug and company took over, new Mirkwood and, Dale didn't, support Thor's family when they were forced to, evacuate. So as a result, Thorin is, you know, very, won't buy anything from, Mirkwood or Dale. Manufacturing, and because, you know, Mirkwood, manufacturing is associated with, Rivendell Inc. and, Galaton Inc., he won't buy anything from them either. Which, you know, makes the quest a lot harder, because they make a lot of really cool, useful stuff. But Darwin, Armando is, one of the employees of Mirkwood. And Alex is kind of one of, not like one of the Erebor dwarves, but maybe one of the Blue Mountain dwarves, like one of Dian's people, that got, you know, he never really fit in there and, you know, kept getting arrested and thrown in, like, you know, the jails of men. But Eric's got kind of a soft spot for him, so he keeps, you know, getting him out, bailing him out. And I'm not sure how the two of them meet. Maybe at the coffee shop. But they hit it off. And Eric's like, what? And Charles is like, oh, they're so cute. And Eric's like, this is not what we're supposed to be doing. And Thorin's like, what the ever-loving fuck? And Armando's like, dude, I got this. Like, we're good friends. Who happened to bone each other? And Thorin's like, what the fuck are you doing? To Alex. And Alex is like, but... And this is where, like... Ah! Oh, shit. Yeah, feels... Okay. So, you know how all those, there are a whole, like, bunch of, like, X-Men, like, how do you deal with homophobia in the 60s? And typically, like, Darwin Armando is characterized as being, like, cool with it, and Alex is the one who's sort of more closeted or more uncomfortable with it in some way. Which could, like, kind of play into this, of, like, Thorin is such, like, a strong personality and is, like, so set against this that, you know, Alex is having trouble admitting his attraction to Armando. But Armando's like, you know, I'm an employee of Mirkwood, that's not my entire identity, it's, you know, certainly part of it, but that's not all of it, and, you know, I really think we have something here, we just, you know, need to take it one day at a time and see what happens, and that is, you know, angsting, yes, and I don't know where this fits in with the quest, I just have thoughts about, let's see, how would they, ooh, you know what, they would appear at the Battle of the Five Armies. That's what happens. Okay. So, yes. Feels.
Oh, I just have a thought. Okay. So, we're kind of considering this modern adjacent AU, yes? In that the technology as far as information and communication is at fairly standard or fairly current levels, right? So the internet exists, and the news media exists, and the UN or NATO or whatever, there is some sort of international governing body that exists. And to the outside world, Smaug's takeover of Erebor looks just like, oh, whatever, there's civil unrest in the blah 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 region. And, oh, well, and to the average American, it's like, oh, well, good on them. They deposed a, you know, a king. We don't like kings. Who gave you the right to rule everybody, you know? They deposed the tyrannical ruler in favor of communism. Hey, now we've got an official in charge of the country who's in favor of making things and selling things. And, wait, did I say communism? I meant capitalism. The Americans don't like communism. Now we've got capitalism, the guy in charge of this country that happens to have all sorts of really nice natural resources, is in favor of selling them. He is not isolationist. He is in favor of making all the money. So, to the average bystander, the position that Thorin's in, they look down on Thorin. It's like if, you know, Queen of England were to rise up and be like, actually, I'm going to behead the entirety of, you know, the House of Commons or whatever. Oh, hello, computer. You're working now. Hurrah! I'm recording on my phone. How's it saying? Oh, right. Just that there's not a lot of international support for Thorin because the other countries are sort of like, well, we want someone who will actually deal with us, as opposed to, for all that you say you're enlightened about accepting Homo sapiens and Homo superior, you know, they're still very isolationist. And, you know, Thorin's grandfather's position was keep the natural resources in the country. Keep the weapons for us alone. Keep the armor for us alone. Keep the advanced tech. Well, we can maybe share that a little bit, but only enough to brag and not enough to let anyone else have it, like, useful, you know? And Smaug's like, well, I am making all the things that go boom, and I will sell them, and I will cause all the biggest arms races, and I will roll around in all the money from all the international buyers. And I think where I was going with this was that Stark Industries is based in America, right? And Tony Stark is, I like it like this, you can totally change it or give me better feels, but that Tony Stark is homo superior. He has a techno-based mutation. He's a technopath. He can figure out all the best ways to put things together, take them apart, put them together better. And Obadiah Stane is a human, and Pepper Potts is a human. And Tony's been using his gift to, you know, boost Stark's, you know, Stark Industries stock prices. And he goes on a little bit of a, it's not really a convention and it's not really a buyer's meeting, but he's going to meet with Smaug and Saruman and Stryker. Except Saruman and Stryker are sort of not in the picture for this, because Stryker is very big on the manufacturing of weapons and armor, and Saruman is very big on the messing around with the mutants and the genetic sector of their company, and Smaug is the weapons dealing, arms race causing face of the company, right? He's their merchant of death. And Tony is on his way to Erebor to meet and discuss, you know, let's mix some Ereborian tech with some Stark Industries tech and blow up, you know, make a bigger, better Jericho missile, when Tony's Humvee gets hijacked. And then it turns out that, like, Obi is working with Smaug and he's paying to have Tony kidnapped because, you know, if there were to be an international incident, then there would be a war, and then they'd both make money on selling more weapons. And Obi is a really terrible person, we know this. Anyway, so Tony gets kidnapped under the mountain. He is... And because he's an American citizen, like, everyone's kind of frowny at Erebor, but at the same time, like, it's not as bad as it would have been if King Thrall were in charge and Tony had gone missing. I don't know. It's all very public opinion. The court of public opinion is very mixed up right now as far as what this is situation in blah, blah, blah region of blah, blah, blah is right now. Because you've also got the isolationists in Genosha. Nobody wants to really talk about them except about how they're all, you know, crazy. Whatever. Eric does not have the best PR. It's possible that his helmet and cape have something to do with this. Okay. So Tony's in the Humvee, and he's supposedly going to be talking, you know, tech things with the guy who's in charge of Smaug, Saruman, and Stryker over in Erebor. Only he gets blown up in his Humvee, and he gets taken prisoner. Terrorists holding Tony prisoner under a mountain, making him build things! And Stryker knows all about these mutants and how to corral them to work for him properly. Oh, and part of it's from Marie, okay? Because when he had Marie, he took some skin samples from her, and her gift is, part of it is taking other people's gifts into her, right? Sucking. And Stryker did something with Marie's mutation. He's got some cells grown in a petri dish, whatever. He was able to manufacture a collar that if you put it on a mutant, it will negate their powers and at the same time suck their energy out of them so they're too weak to rebel. So Tony gets strapped with this collar around his neck and stuck in a dungeon in the castle because I like castles. And Smaug's like, build me this thing, that thing, and the other thing. And then Tony's like, well, what? What are you talking about? And then Smaug's gloating, because I feel like dragons would really be very big on gloating, because he's very secure in his position at top of the heap. And he's just like,
blah, 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 Obi tried to get you killed, blah, 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 you shouldn't be dating a human in the first place because Pepper's a human, and blah, 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 and Tony's, like, stuck under the mountain. And eventually, you know, he's trying to work his way towards freedom, but he doesn't have his gift. He doesn't have his mutation at hand anymore. And it's not like he's an idiot. He's still a technical genius, but it's very disconcerting. It's like someone chopped one of his hands off. He doesn't know how to deal with it without added... part of Tony's story is how he has to learn to function without having his gift to rely on. And then you can make parallels with the arc reactor and maybe even give him his own arc reactor. I'm not sure how that part fits in yet. Anyway, so Tony ends up joining up with Thorin when Thorin ousts Smaug because, like, time he escapes so that Tony is breaking out as Thorin is breaking in, and then they sort of are able to, like, pincer Smaug, and then they capture him, and then they snap one of Stryker's collars on him, but he's not, like, is he a mutant? Is Smaug a mutant? Is he a feral lizard-based mutant? Or is he kind of like Toad, only instead of spitting paralyzing mucus, he spits fire? Does the collar do anything? I don't know! Alright, I'll leave that for Danielle and Jess to figure out. But, anyway, Tony meets up with Thorin after the end of, you know, when Thorin's retaking Erebor. And for all that Erebor is supposed to be a more inclusive nation than Genosha was, Thorin is still kind of isolationist. He's like, yes, sure. Like, okay, he's like, dwarves are the best. We have feral mutations and we form clans. We form packs. Ah! They form packs of badgers. And they stick together. But then at the same, but like, you know, mutant and proud. So Thorin is most appreciative of people with the same mutation as him, but he is also very pro everybody who is a mutant, which he's not anti-human, but he's standoffish, and he's sort of like, Tony Stark, why are you with a human? You know, like, I can accept that she should be alive because I'm not as, you know, strict as Crazy Eric over there. And then Eric is like, I am writing a strongly worded letter at you about calling me crazy, possibly accompanied by some knives thrown by my brain. And then there's, like, you know, politicking and shit like that. But, like, Tony's just sort of... But Pepper keeps me steady. And then we have a little bit of Tony-Pepper loving right there, because I like them. I mean, I think in the movies, the way they put them together, it would not function at all, but I don't know. I just, I want something to be like, oh, we're, you know, not like we're interracial, but like we're interspecies and we still make it work. And it's just, and then like it brings into the whole fact that Erebor is a more, contrasting the official stance of Erebor being in a more accepting place with Thorin's personal opinion of, after my family was hurt, we must close ranks against all outsiders, and if you are not a mutant, you're not allowed. And then have there be chit-chatting and stuff. And also the fact that, okay, I have no idea if this would actually work, but I feel like in the comics they retcon the shit out of everybody's powers and just make shit up. And at one point, like, didn't Marie have, like, every single person on the X-Men team's powers because she touched them at one point or another? But, like, alright, if Bilbo's mutation is he had, okay, you said he was a historian, right, Danielle? So what would a great power for a historian be? Telepathy through touching of objects, aka psychometry, aka let me touch this Civil War sword and it will tell me all about who its master was and what battles it was at. For identifying swords. Yes, yes. So basically, Bilbo touches something and he is able to pull from it its history and its, you know, important facts. And Marie touches someone and she's able to pull from them their powers or their life force. So, it's completely by accident. They're like, I don't know, they bump into each other in the middle of making dinner or something on the run. Bilbo accidentally brushes his finger against a crack between Marie's sleeve and her glove or something. It's not a deliberate, it's completely by accident, but because it's two opposing forces tugging, very much like, say, tug of war, they balance each other out. So Marie finally has someone she can hold hands with, and it's so emotionally overwhelming, and it's just like, simple human touch and companionship, and she's not actually interested in Bilbo. Her tastes are less, because there's like a familial vibe there a little bit, and also he's too blonde for her tastes or something. He's too soft. I don't know. Something. She's just not interested in him like that. It's just that she's never had someone that she can, in the last 15, 20 years, she hasn't had someone that she could just, because I don't remember when her mutation turned on, like in regards to where we are in this universe, but like she hasn't had someone she can just platonically touch, and then we can have a whole big thing about just the powers of hugging. All the hugging. Aww. Bilbo hugging Marie. Hugging. But, right, so Bilbo, I feel like psychometry would be the best superpower for a historian, just because he could walk around and just be like, I mean, it's probably got totally terrible for, you know, day-to-day life, just because, like, oh, you sat on this bench, and now you're getting, like, hobo images, and, like, dog peeing on you images, and, like, I don't know, all sorts of terrible things. But at the same time, like, it'd be great for him being a historian, because he can just touch old things, and they can tell him, and then he can write papers about it, and it'd be great. Oh my goodness, can you imagine what kind of a citation that would look like? Oh god, okay, I'm gonna stop now, that was terrible. Alright. Feelings.
Hey guys, so it's Jess again, and I was re-listening to our T-Shop Feels, and I had a thought, and it's kind of a terrible thought, and therefore I needed to share it. So, in Marissa's last, number 7, Bilbo has the mutant power of psychometry. So if he touches something, he gets like the psychic vibes from other people who touched that object or who used it or whatever. What does he get from the Arkenstone? So they've gone all the way to Erebor, or I guess they've retaken Erebor from S Enterprises. Why am I stuck on that? I have no idea. Anyway, they've retaken Erebor from S Enterprises, and Thorne's so, you know, he's so proud of himself, and he's proud of everyone else too. Feeling Keeley, oh my god, we need to bring in Feeling Keeley. I haven't worked that out. So, but he's, you know, there's this moment that he's finally managed, and I'm pretty sure he does this in the book. He, you know, shows the Arkenstone. No, he doesn't, because Bilbo finds it. Oh god, Bilbo finds it. Bilbo, that's right, because Bilbo snuck in. And Bilbo remembers all Thorin's stories about the Arkenstone. And this is before they take the mountain back. So Bilbo sneaks in and grabs the Arkenstone. And he's not thinking clearly because, you know, he's trying so hard to be quiet. And I think he's wearing the ring. And there's this, and at least in the book, it's like, you know, Smaug doesn't know what hobbits smell like, which always struck me as like, okay, we'll just go with it. So I don't know what sort of the equivalent would be in this modern adjacent version. Some kind of not high tech, probably some kind of mutant, supervising system. Maybe a giant eye. Guys, it's a giant eye. It's a lidless eye. You know it is. Come on. It's a lidless eye. Sorry. Yes. But the lidless eye didn't see him because he's wearing the ring, which is some sort of extra special mutant something. Worse thought. Guys, it's just a normal ring. But, no, wait. Or There's something there with, like, the ring and Bilbo's psychometry. Like, ooh, a bunch of the, I don't know if you can hear me snapping my fingers. I'm snapping my fingers. A bunch of the mutants, you know, the X-Men can, like, they level up. So that's, like, Jean Grey and the whole Phoenix. Well, actually, it's not Jean Grey and the whole Phoenix thing, but that's a whole other thing. But, you know, the alpha level or omega level mutants can level up and get like extra powers, and it's how Emma Frost like originally just has telepathy, and then she can implant thoughts, and then she can turn into diamonds because, you know, why not. So Bilbo levels up, he can use the mutant powers because they thought that there weren't any consequences of him spending time with Rogue, with Marie, but there were. He spent time, it's not so much him spending time with her, but him touching her stuff. Maybe it was her ring. Maybe it's her ring. Anyway, but somehow the ring absorbs the power of another mutant that had the power of invisibility. So when Bilbo wears the ring, he's using that person's power. It's like Marie's power, but in but it only works, it also works with Bilbo's power, so it only works through objects. Ooh, Lord. Okay. So, but he's sneaking through and he grabs, he's trying to avoid, you know, detection, and he's never been here before, so he doesn't, you know, the corridors are all dark and scary and whatever. So he grabs the Arkenstone without thinking about it, and it's a split second, and he's entirely overwhelmed by, I guess not multiple generations, just one generation, really, of, by Thrain's complete obsession with the Arkenstone. And it's such like a powerful and like weirdly directed emotion. Like, maybe usually his powers are just like, you know, whatever the person was thinking about at the time. So it's more that he has a link to that person, but it gets stronger if the person was like obsessing about the object that he's touching. Maybe that's why like the ring works better. Unless the mutant was obsessing. Maybe it was like an invisibility mutant's family ring or something. And that could like get tied in with Lidless Eye, because that's like the mutant got like really obsessed once he lost his ring, and like now he's like the opposite of invisibility and like tries to make everyone else uninvisible. Oh Lord. Okay, sorry. Side thought. But back to Bilbo and the Arkenstone and Thrain. No. But back, oh, it's Thror, damn it. Thorin, son of Thrain, son of Thror. Okay. So Thror was the one that was utterly obsessed with the Arkenstone. But because his obsession was centered on the object that Bilbo is now touching, like, Bilbo has this link to Thror, and it's completely overwhelming him. And he somehow manages to stumble back out, and okay, guys, I really want everyone to survive. I do. I'm sorry. I want everyone to survive the Battle of the Five Armies. Please. So, in this version, or my version, I don't know. But he stumbles out. He can't figure out how to let go of the Arkenstone because Thor's obsession is, like, channeling through him. But he also knows he needs to get out. Like, he's a hobbit. He's not, like, he's strong enough. It's part of what makes hobbits resistant to the lure of the ring. I don't know, I'm mixing mythologies, the ring is supposed to be able to, you know, in, like, the Lord of the Rings, like, the ring is supposed to be able to do anything, including let you speak the language of anything at all. And I'm always really annoyed that they didn't, like, run with that. But only the hobbit, we only ever see the hobbits have it, and hobbits only want to be invisible, so it makes them invisible, and that's kind of it, which is really sad. But anyway, but hobbits are supposed to be resistant to it, because they're, like, so sure of themselves. So then that, I'm a little unclear on how that works with the ring in this context, but that does let him sort of hold on to himself enough that he can bring out the Arkenstone, that he doesn't sort of just sit there like gooing over it for like eternity. He can't let go of it either, so he brings it out to Thorin, who, now I don't know, somebody pick up the thread, we can round robin this shit. But I want something with this link between like Thorin and Bilbo and the Arkenstone with psychometry. Like, make it work, guys. We can do this. It'll be beautiful. And we also need to figure out what to do with Feelin Keely. I will throw that back into your guys' court. Come on. Come on. It'll be beautiful.
Hey, guys. Jess, you're a life ruiner. I just want you to know. And Marissa, you're still a life ruiner, just in a different way. I swear I can't get you saying Thorin has so much fucking hair out of my head and it keeps making me laugh at inappropriate times. Anyway, so I am very OTP-ish, but only when it comes to my OTPs. And in this case, Logan Rogue is one of my OTPs. Anything else I can handle. But like Logan Rogue, Spock Uhura, Amanda Sarek, Xena Gabrielle, those four pairings, they just need to be with their people and only their people for now, forever, the rest of eternity. I don't care that Logan has like over 100 plus years that he doesn't remember. So, Rogue is outrageously jealous of Thorin. Like, ridiculously jealous. Because not only has he befriended, like, formed really close relationships, both emotionally and physically, with Wolverine, who she is going to get with, because that is the canon of my head, and now Bilbo, who is like her new like surrogate uncle, I guess. I just really just want her to not get along with Thorin at all. She's like, oh, you stole one man, now you're stealing the other one, whatever. And Feely and Keely, I don't even really know if Feely and Keely have too much of a purpose in The Hobbit. Then again, I've never read it, except for comic relief. But I want her, for some reason, to hate Thorin and to be just super best friends with Feely and Keely. And I love Feely and Keely best when they're setting up Bilbo and Thorin, or like Bella and Thorin, or like Bethel, like Billa, whoever they choose for her to be when they decide to fend Bilbo up. But yeah, no. So, do they work at the cafe? No, they don't work at the cafe, but Thorin is just chilling in Genosha, or I don't know where we put them now, Jess, because you said you weren't really a fan of the Genosha backstory. I don't know where they are. Oh. So, I mean, could they just be, like, chillin' in Mutant Happy Place until they decide to retake Erebor? Could that be a thing? And now Feely and Keely are like, you know, just biding our time until our uncle wakes up and decides that he wants to go and be King Under the Mountain again. Yeah. I don't really know where I was going with this, but I just needed to say that Rogue and Thorin hate each other. Booyah.
Yeah, so that's it. Hope you guys had fun listening to that. We had a stupid amount of fun making it. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the tea party. try to show some class. Welcome to the last cup. We keep it boiling hot. We keep the party moving till we drink the last drop.
You're not just